When we did the Dune reviews, we never talked about how funny the name Bene Gesserit is. Like, it doesn't sound... It sounds like a Monty Python joke. Like, and I'm the seventh priest of the Bene Gesserit.
We're the sisters of the Bene Gesserit.
Oh, yes,
the sisters of the Bene Gesserit. Come in, sit down, yes.
Sort of like shadowy, truthful people.
I am the Duke of House Atreides. It sounds like they're making it up as they go along.
Yeah, but you've got like Harkonnen Baron.
And you, what is your name? Paul. I am Paul.
And this is my sister from the Bene Gesserit.
Yes, I'll speak in my deep voice when I mean business.
The voice, that's a good power to have, isn't it?
Silence!
Yeah. When would you use it?
I would use it to, life. I think, to get rid of cues. Like...
Or if someone jumps in front of you at the queue.
Oh, yeah.
I was here.
You know me, James. I'd actually probably be to do it if someone goes to, like, take the tea bag out of the tea too soon. Like,
leave it in. Let it brew. Let it brew.
What a waste of power it would be on me, indeed.
Yeah.
What about you?
I'd probably just use it at home when I want something.
Coffee.
It's Dune crazy.
Dune mania.
Still running. Same. Sand on the dune.
Lots of glowing reviews.
If you haven't listened to our Dune coverage, lots of coverage.
Dune week.
We had the Dune review in episode 117. We had the Dune spoiler
review.
If
you've now seen Dune and you want to get some plot details, please go. We did whole extra takes and things we liked, things that we didn't like in that little spoiler cast. So go and check that out if you haven't
already.
Some
stuff on socials. I also, in the episode 117, we did include a recap of Dune Part 1 as well, if you haven't seen that. I realised also hearing it back that I really should have done that as Rory Stewart. You know how Rory Stewart, on The Rest Is Politics, Rory Stewart does the explainers about...
Imagine if the Imperium had their own liberal intelligentsia who listened to The Rest Is Politics.
And so on Arrakis, you have the Fremen. And the Fremen harvest spice.
It's a really important resource, Spice. You know, me and Tony, we really knew that. We made that clear.
And Shoshana and I, we walked through the south, which many people
know. You travelled to Arrakis.
Because you travelled to Arrakis.
Yeah, and many people know the south of Arrakis is uninhabitable.
It's completely uninhabitable.
And the capital is Arrakeen. Now, the Harkonnen.
I actually used to tutor.
Tutor Paul Atreides.
Tutor Paul Atreides.
He was a bright child, but incredibly precocious.
His brother constantly interfering, saying he was the one, and I was teaching him Latin.
I just would have liked that, like, less than explaining, because he does it so well for other things, but he should do it for actually
explaining some conflict in Libya.
Yeah, the Harkonnens really have run Arrakis for 80 years. The slight lisp.
Much to the dismay of... And spice.
It's kind of a petrochemical...
Anyway. And it has hallucinogenic qualities too, isn't it?
Yeah, they've got these extraordinary... No, that's what he would say. Here we go. Yeah, it's extraordinary. The Fremen have these beautiful blue eyes that just stand out.
My Alistair Campbell really comes from my core.
A really connoisseur.
Do you
get it?
Do you think it's also sort of deep, whispery?
Yeah, a little bit whispery.
I think as he's getting older, he'll sort of... Yeah.
He does talk through his lips and his mouth.
We could never work with the Fremen, could you remember?
Well, the Fremen, they wear still suits. They're in the sieges. You have to go to the sieges I go Blair.
They should have been
the sieges.
Yeah, they should have been paid by the team to do like a political explainer. That's such an obvious brand. Yeah, yeah. Like for people who've never seen Dune. I'm like writing the own ad copy for whoever's on the...
The Rest Is Politics X. Yeah. Dune Part 2.
You get like the archives of whatever Frank Herbert wrote.
You just get them to, really... Later Dune Messiah and the Children of Dune.
And you do an entire leading episode with the Baron. Just in his oil bath.
Well, I wanted to take Arrakis.
But many people have said you're a savage, a monster.
It was an insurrection, wasn't it?
You slaughtered the House of Atreides.
We never touched the Atreides.
Yeah. It's all with Dave Bautista and he's just screaming.
Yeah. How could you give it to them?
Yeah.
That dude.
Hey, Mama, I'm here to get Arrakis back.
I'm going to slit your throat and fight in the gladiator arena.
God bless Austin Butler and his Elvis voice. I hope in his next batch of projects. Bike Riders, he's still going to sound like Elvis because he's going to sound a bit like a cowboy.
The thing is, he doesn't sound Elvis in the sense he hasn't got the southern accent.
So he's not down there doing all that. But he's got the kind of more sincere...
I've seen him in Junkies. He's like, oh, mystery. Yeah, I've heard of that.
In Rainbows by Radiohead. Yeah,
he's not. He's talking out of his throat. The back
he's talking
of his throat.
From his soul, isn't he? Really. Yeah. You know, and he is cool.
He's a good-looking guy.
He is a good-looking guy.
He's got great... Whoever does the product in his hair needs a raise. It's always just like a disheveled elegance, I describe it as.
It's pitch perfect. And I think like sometimes Chalamet sat next to him being like, I used to be the coolest movie star.
Yeah, you know, I did. Yeah. Bones and all. Now you're the coolest movie star.
I think Chalamet needs to back off for a bit.
I love him.
Back off.
He's having a bit of a Jennifer Lawrence in 2015-16 mode. So she had like two franchises with the X-Men and with Hunger Games that was sort of coming out. And she had a lot of Oscar films, Passengers. She was just a little bit everywhere.
Mm.
And I think she benefited. She did Mother. She needed to sort of benefit from a bit of a rest.
So maybe in the time between now and the next June, he needs to go quiet. And then maybe do a TV series.
Because he's putting out, like, he's in three films a year. He's always on the cycle of...
Yeah. He's always at a premiere wearing not enough clothes.
Yeah.
Looking underdressed. Do you remember the Wonka one was like 0 degrees.
It's quite hot. Like, Barry Keoghan loves to get his arms out. You do the arms.
Barry
Flare
Keoghan,
trousers.
I don't know what's... He's just dressed in whatever he likes.
I think he always will. He's a little bit, oh, yeah, I'll put that outfit on. Sure. He's just always... I listened to a podcast with the two actors that do it. And they're like... Barry Keoghan's great, but he's doing the same thing and everything. They sort of called him out for being the same thing and everything, which I don't think is fair.
No, I think that's a bit harsh. Yeah. I think he is a type, but you know, he's doing his thing.
He'll make a good Joker.
Yeah, talking about actors then, you just threw me, what am I going to...
Separately.
Yeah.
They're starting to throw out cast members for the season two of Last of Us Part Two, which I know you haven't played, but they've cast... the one from
Caitlin Dever
as Great Abby, intro. which is interesting because she was she plays in Uncharted 4, which is the same developer that made The Last of Us and Uncharted, Naughty Dog. She plays Nathan Drake's daughter in one scene. So she's clearly like through osmosis of being in that, which is made in the same building, been cast as Abby in Last of Us Part 2. I wonder if they'll, because you know Jeffrey Wright's in Last of Us Part 2.
Brilliant.
I really hope they give him the role if he wants to do it and he's back as... He's doing the most Jeffrey Wright in The Last of Us Part 2. He's like a sort
wait, of... Wait, was Jeffrey Wright in The Last of Us Game Part 2?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wait,
yeah,
I didn't know this. Last of Us
Game. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's in it. And you're like, damn, it's unmistakably Jeffrey Wright. But yeah. I hope they give it to him.
Yeah.
Because he's great. And I'm sure he had a good time doing the game.
My goodness.
Yeah.
My goodness. I'm sorry, I'm still thinking about how overexposed Chalamet is and what he can do in his sort of retirement.
Yeah, he is a bit now. I would say go away. And it's not because I don't like what he's done. I think he's great. Withhold yourself.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, do you know who does have a face for the Dune saga and really should be in it?
Who's not currently in it?
Yes.
Go on.
But can't necessarily be in it because he's been in something too close to it.
Sure.
Is Adam Driver.
Oh, yeah, so
he's
Dune
got
ready.
Such a Dune face.
So Dune ready.
More a face for Dune than he does for Star Wars.
As a Harkonnen?
No, because I can't imagine Adam Driver bald. It's really strange. I think he
Has
could
that not happen
he
yet?
Could be an older Paul Atreides, perhaps.
Yeah. Oh my god, an aged Atreides.
An aged Atreides. I see him as an Atreides person, a humanoid.
I'm going to take back this land.
Yeah.
Whoa. Watch out.
I watched the scene when when Ben Solo does the thing to Han Solo in The Force Awakens, and I have the voice.
I know what I have to do, but I don't know if I have the strength to do it.
What did you think about Christopher Walken in Dune, by the way? We didn't talk about that. I think I liked him. I like because I look at him, I'm like, he's like a relic of his cinema. Like,
I'd never
around.
Reject him now. He's sort of, the spice. It's
send some sass.
He didn't ham it up as Walken. He's actually just quite well behaved.
He wasn't, if you'll pardon the expression, a Walken meme.
Yeah,
you know, like a walking meme.
They must be aware of that. Denis must be like, Christopher, I love you. Don't just
a little less. Anyway, lots of Dune talk as ever, but another week's gone by and we're talking about other films this week. So, you know, Dune's come out and it's basically taken every single cinema slot.
Yeah.
So the film we're going to review today is something that James has been able to go
Perfect
and see.
Perfect Days.
By Wim Wenders.
Yes, with a Vuvuzela.
Yeah, Vuvuzela, because he's German. Yeah, yes. Vim. Yeah. Very stylish man as well. Have you ever seen
I think I've seen a picture, yeah.
But you know, that's the kind of movies that we're reviewing at the moment because Dune is taking up all the major slots. So you get the kind of counter-programming.
But nonetheless, I was really glad I saw Perfect Days as counter-programming.
So if you want a nice, almost digestive to Dune, something to just offset, palate cleanser.
I'll get onto this, but Perfect Days, functionally as a film, is a marvellous palate cleanser for the chaotic, urban, sprawling madness of life.
Wow.
I'll get onto it in my review coming up.
Please continue to send your reviews of Dune Part 2 in. We are collating them. We're a little bit. We're recording this. By the time you listen to this,
like another 10 days would have gone past. So if you've sent in correspondence and we haven't read it out, it's
we're recording these in the future, so you always have an episode. But nonetheless, the show goes on.
So as ever, let's do a film review and proceed with the show.
Aren't we peaceful? Aren't we sort of? And there is the episode.
We don't want to give anyone any surprises.
No.
Hello. Yeah. And you're listening to Pulp Kitchen.
Yeah. I never got enough respect for pinning Jingle Bells perfectly in time with the Christmas episode this year.
I don't get enough respect.
Yeah.
For what I do.
I had to find. I thought you could just add Jingle Bells to any song. No, you can't. You have to find Jingle Bells at the exact BPM of the track. So to find out the BPM of our track, then go to a Jingle Bells song generator, type in the BPM. Yeah. It was actually quite an involved.
It was.
I felt like Mark Ronson.
It was 2.5 months ago.
I was really happy with it. And
anyway, commented. Episode 119. Let's go.
So, Perfect Days. I will say it was not a perfect day when I went to go and see it. I live sort of near Camden, and I went to Camden, it'd be lovely Camden Curzon Cinema to go and watch the film. There's sort of lovely screenings under the arches. And it was a little bit sunny on a Sunday, and therefore Camden was just heaving, sprawling, tourists, food, noodles, just Doc Martens. I hate it. I hate people. It was busy. But anyway, I then sort of go into this beautifully soundproof, perfect dark, perfect day screening. A very full screening, actually, considering that it's out when June is out, but lots of sort of very sort of...
serious people.
Serious film people.
With their movie tote bags.
Sort of £200 to £300 glasses and your tote bags.
Severe fringes.
Yes. An intense frown on the brow. And there was me with a little cold brew watching Perfect Days. Directed by Wim Wenders, who's actually in his late 70s. I've not seen any of his other films. Gives us a Japanese language film set in the Shibuya district of Tokyo. And this film's all about Koji Yakusho, who plays Hirayama, an older Tokyo resident who cleans public toilets. And the very first 30-minute sequence of the film, I'd say this film takes place over the course of a week, and we are treated to the days of his life as they go. So we sort of get this opening 30-minute sequence. I'd say the first 15 to 20 minutes is almost dialogue-free. And we encounter this man go through the entirety of his day. He wakes up, makes his bed very meticulously, sprays his plants that he collects from various parts around the city, meticulously cleans his teeth, fetches his keys. He comes outside, he has his overalls on, and on the back it says Tokyo cleaning. He looks up at the weather and is sort of engaging with whether it's a sunny day or if it's a rainy day. He gets the same coffee from a vending machine outside his home, and it's like a canned coffee vending machine. He sits in his van, has everything he needs to do his job, and he every single day chooses a cassette playing music from the 70s and 80s rock bands. You've got House of the Rising Sun, Pale Blue Eyes by Velvet Underground, Sunny Afternoon from the Kinks. And the cassette thing is less like a preservation of old hipster media. It was much more of a, I know where this piece of analog physical media goes and it fits in this box and I know where to place it and I will play this one today and I will choose it. And then in his house, there's actually like books and cassettes and all of this analog media that's sort of very carefully organized. And he has this big, huge carabiner clip of all of these different shaped keys, which are all the keys of all the places he's going to visit and he's going to clean in the toilets. And he drives as the sun rises in Tokyo along the spiraling highway. And the only Tokyo we see really are the highways between the very immaculate public toilets in Tokyo that he goes to clean. He's very diligent. He has a mirror and he looks underneath the toilet bowl and behind the seat to make sure everything's clean. And at lunch, he goes and sits near the temple and he has a lunch and he encounters mostly the same people every single day. He has a little film camera and he takes pictures of the same tree and the same leaves and the same shadows. At the end of his day, he goes to a communal washroom and meticulously cleans himself down. He goes to the shop. He gets his photography developed. Buys a new reel of film, takes his overalls, gets it cleaned. And there's sort of this idea that I think in Hollywood we'd be quite well conditioned to look at a character who cleans toilets for a living and for us to engage with that in a sort of overly politicized, sympathetic fashion. But I think what I soon realized is that that's not what this film is trying to achieve. And actually, the fact that he cleans toilets for a living is much more of a happenstance. And it's much more about someone who is... trying to, there's a sort of solace in the city. And being of the occupation that a toilet cleaner gives you, it means that probably other people aren't going to bother you. And there's a comfort in the repetition and the decisiveness about everything he does. It never portrays him as someone who's not capable of doing something else or someone who's stupid. He reads constantly at night and he's very cultured and engages with music. And there's sort of this idea that the fact that he cleans toilets is neither here nor there. You just happen to be following this man and engaging with the city as he is cleaning toilets. The days are bookended by these black and white dream sequences that are entirely abstract but contain these flashes of memorable moments of his day. And there's little moments that happen that sort of gets you an understanding of who this man is. There's this one time he's cleaning one of the toilets he regularly cleans, and down the side of the paneling of the cupboard is this folded up piece of paper. And at first he grabs the paper to just throw it in the bin, and then he opens it and realizes it's the structure of a noughts and crosses grid with one of the holes filled in. And instead of throwing it away, he decides to fill in the next hole, fold the paper back up again and put it in. And over the following days, he's playing noughts and crosses with somebody else who's also left that paper and playing. There's also a moment where his niece comes to stay with him, and sort of in another film, that would be the sort of interrupting factor of his life that chooses to reframe, and he's confronted with. I can't have a niece. You interrupted my thing. But there's actually not what this film is about. I don't know if any other people really like on TikTok and social media the sort of Sunday reset core films where it's like, come with me as I do the cushions, wipe down the surfaces. Yeah. And so he obviously is functionally cleaning his cleaning toilets, but everything is very meticulous about his space and where it goes. And I must say, especially in the first 30, 45 minutes, I really enjoyed being in the presence of this character and being in the presence of this film. It's beautifully shot, and there's something really engaging and enticing about this man's actions. I think that it's 2 hours long, and I feel like it could have benefited from a key change. I think you live out 7-8 days of this guy's life, and I think at the end of it, after 2 hours, I can't help but think it was maybe a little bit too subdued, maybe a bit too minimalist. Maybe I needed... I will say, if you have a lot of chaos and noise in your life, you will definitely find the company of this film very relaxing, reassuring, and soothing for the soul. But it is very interesting. It is very good. A little bit too long. And the less I tried to make sense of what I was seeing politically and the more what I was engaging with as a piece of art and a sort of very brief understanding over why this man does what he does. Is it because he's trying to find anonymity in a city? That to me lies in the interesting question for Perfect Days. But a very sort of quiet and contemplative film that I'm very glad I saw, actually, because I think if we weren't pushing each other to see films every week, given that June's just out, I probably would have missed it. And I'm glad I saw it.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, I've not seen any Wim Wenders, but I Paris, Texas is like a big film that sits on my list, and it's like 3 hours long and it's very slow, but everyone says it's very beautiful, and it's like there's something I need to do. I've also wanted to see Wings of Desire for ages, but he is one of those kind of directors that's just a blind spot for me. Yeah. So maybe this is a good way in, actually.
Yeah, it sort of like becomes, so many other films would not get away with the repetitive monotony of this film, but it gets away with it. And even moments when he is confronted by the external forces, it doesn't define his journey in the film. It's more of a little indication for you to make up your own mind. Like, there's loads of like little moments. I didn't go through the whole day where he goes to this, like, often he has like two or three places where he goes for noodles to have dinner, and the people who are there know him and they don't not speak to him, but they sort of know his order, and there's this wonderful familiarity in someone who goes about and does what they do. It's sort of almost like a respect for that discipline. I've never really seen a film like it, I'd say, but I definitely enjoyed my time with it.
It sounds a bit like Jim Jarmusch made a film called Patterson about...
Adam Driver? Yeah. I don't think I saw it.
Yeah, it's very similar. Like, Adam Driver plays a bus driver called Patterson in a town called Patterson. And again, it's the same thing. Every day he gets up, he drives his bus.
Yeah.
He sits in the same spot to have his lunch. He has the same thing for lunch.
Yeah.
He writes poetry. He then goes to the same bar every night. He walks the dog, and it's kind of this repetition thing. And it does sound like almost like a good parallel there.
Yeah. There's this wonderful like idea as well of like capturing media and storing it. And you're watching a film, and when his niece comes, she's like, he's playing all this amazing music for her, and she's borrowing the tapes, and she's like, oh, I have that on Spotify. And he's like, is that a website? He doesn't really know. But there's this idea of like being able to tangibly gift someone something, and this film also being a piece of media that's there to sit and be placed somewhere. The idea of like nooks and crannies and things existing.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable. Like why he captures the same thing over and over again, what he's looking for. And it does, do you need to be looking for something? If you just find a tree particularly captivating, what's wrong with taking a picture of it every day and putting those photos in a box? Because they make you happy.
I feel like it sounds like the kind of perfect, like we said earlier, perfect balm after Dune. Yeah. Dune's big, loud and long. And this is like, hey, and now perfect days.
It's definitely about finding the appreciation in the small things in life, like and not trying to find a grand understanding for what you do. There's still a lot that I haven't said about the film, but you do, I think you live 8 days of his life, and like the first day is about 30 minutes and then the sort of like 15 to 20 minutes for the following days. It's interesting and soothing.
Well, if you've seen Perfect Days by Wim Wenders and would like to email in your thoughts, please do, as ever, write into hello@popkitchenpodcast.com.
It actually made me really want to get into printing photos and storing photo books, and like the kind of tangible physicality that gives of just knowing that the photos are there, and they might not mean much to you the week after you printed them, but in 10 years that's like, you're so glad to have that in a physical place. You could physically give it and physically look. That's it. It's more of a feeling. Get a feeling about that film. But if you are overwhelmed and scattered and plead, like, this is the film for you, those of you who like to see people wipe down their home and light a scented candle. But it's like a Japanese version of that, which is even more in there.
And it's 2 hours long.
And it's 2 hours long.
Not 2 minutes.
Yeah, it's 2 hours long. That was Perfect Days.
Perfect Days.
George, should we go through some of the emails that we get sent every single week to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com, just like McLovin did? I have a feeling.
Eric.
His name's Eric, but there's a McLovin in the
Yeah, Eric,
email.
Your name's Eric from Norway, but you've written in as McLovin. Eric McLovin?
I'm McLovin
Eric, with a picture of Andrew Garfield as your picture. But anyway.
Hello from Norway. I'm a long-time listener, but this is only the second time I've sent an email to the show, a friend of the show.
Welcome.
I absolutely love your show, and it's been giving me great comfort during a difficult time I've been going through lately.
Here we go.
On a more positive note, I just recently went with a friend to watch a double feature of Dune Part 1 and 2 in IMAX.
Great.
Congrats. That's brilliant. Yeah. Ears must be ringing.
Yeah, long day.
Yeah. I'm one of those who loved Part 1 so much that I'd seen it 4 times before Part 2 came out. Wow. I adored the world and character so much that I read the book not long after watching Part 1. It might go without saying, but I was extremely excited for Part 2, and I'm happy to say I think it delivered on everything. Denis has truly outdone himself here. The way he tackles and somehow contains this absolute behemoth of a story into a cohesive experience is nothing short of amazing. There are no words to describe just how technically impressive Dune Part 2 is. Greg Fraser has crafted some of the most stunning, epic, and jaw-dropping visuals I've ever had the pleasure of seeing on the big screen. Yeah, we complimented it in our reviews if you haven't listened to them. Hans Zimmer's score will play in my head anytime I see a still or read anything about Dune. The editors and VFX artists are some of the highest quality you could imagine, and the actors, in all caps, bring it. Always exciting when you can tell how much the actors are into and enjoying their roles. Yeah, that is true. You can tell they're enjoying it.
Yeah. Like they feel the weight and the worth.
Oppenheimer, you felt that. Yeah. Killers of the Flower Moon. Anything Scorsese. Yeah. Yeah. Back to Eric says, but it's
sorry, actually on that, by the way, I said about Dune that it seems to be that if you have a movie that's near 3 hours long these days, it has to have an orange poster.
Yeah, yeah.
Dune Part 2, Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon.
Condition
it's
warning.
Like orange on a poster, flags. It's gonna
settle in.
Hold in your bladder.
Yeah. But it's important to give the film credit in other areas too, as I feel the general praise will be directed at the superb visual effects and action sequences. Dune Part 2 is not just a visual trick. The characters are handled with such care and attention to detail, there's a potential risk at stake for each of our main characters, resulting in an incredible tension being built as the film goes on and the characters face more danger. It's also a very complex deconstruction of the stereotypical hero. This is obviously credited to the great Frank Herbert, but it's beautifully realised in the films. One of the big criticisms I saw for Part 1 back when it released was surrounding the character of Paul Atreides. Many people found him stale and cliche, and I'm very excited to see how those people react, to see where his character goes in Part 2. A more simplified, I like Dune a lot. I saw a comment that Janine made about how he sort of never wanted Paul Atreides to be a sympathetic character, and that there's something inherently tempestuous about him.
He said that Frank Herbert was surprised that when he published Dune, people said that Paul Atreides was a hero. And he was like, no, he's an anti-hero.
There's a story that's coming, apparently.
Yeah, so when he wrote Dune Messiah, he wanted to change that, but now knowing that, Denis Villeneuve wrote that into
had the privilege
Dune
of
Part
reading
two.
Dune
exactly,
Messiah,
and that's he said he slightly changed Chani's character to reflect the anti-hero nature of Paul.
It's nice to know that they're thinking forward for all of that. Question Are there any films you love that are made by a big director but for whatever reason isn't talked about much? I'm not referring to a movie you think is simply underrated, as that could be a very popular film that people just don't like much, but more if there are any hidden gems in these big directors' filmographies that most people might not have seen or even heard of.
Small film from a big director.
Small film from a big director, okay. Yeah. Like a lot of people have been saying recently, Incendie from Denis Villeneuve.
Incendie, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Which we've not seen. And then he lists some of his favourites. He says, Francis Ford Coppola, Rumblefish from 1983, a true hidden gem, might be my favourite film made by Coppola. Martin Scorsese, Bringing Out the Dead from 1999, A Thrilling Fever Dream, Steven Spielberg's Duel from 1971, A simple but very intense road rage thriller. Wong Kar Wai, Happy Together, from 1997, Melancholy at its Finest, Michael Mann's Thief from 1981, Coolest Movie Ever? Okay. And these are only a handful. I realise that some of these were made before the directors were big, but I still don't think they have the attention they deserve. Thank you for the great content. You have a really positive effect on your listeners. Love from Norway, Eric.
Thank you, Eric. Small films from big directors. Small films.
I'd say, like, not the hugest director, but an under-film scene that's my favourite is Shame from Steve McQueen. Everyone knows 12 Years a Slave, and I'm like, oh, you should go check out Shame. It's really good. But it's not, he's not like a huge director, I'd say, even though he did win Best Picture.
I'm trying to think of who's like one, who's a big name that comes out with films that you think, oh, what have you ever seen there?
Well, no one's seen like Insomnia from Christopher Nolan.
Not in a while. Yeah, I do actually really want to watch it.
Yeah,
but I think it's just because it's like the most least Nolan-y film.
Yeah.
Like actually Richard Linklater's made like he's made big films like School of Rock and like obviously the Befores and the Boyhoods are big, but like he's made small films that I don't know, I've seen the smaller ones though, like I don't know because I haven't seen them.
Yeah,
it's a head scratcher. We'll think about it.
Yeah,
thank you, Eric. This next email is from Joseph writes in with an email headline that says straight out of Theatre Dune Part 2. G'day George and James and George. Taking James's philosophy of closed vowel to open vowel sound, then open vowel to closed vowel sound.
J-jaw.
But he did...
J-jaw.
Sure.
Whereas if you go
J-jaw. Okay. I'm an 18-year-old from Hobart, Tasmania, which is the bottom island of Australia, and have always loved film.
The Australians? I've been emailing in.
Yeah,
we've had a lot of...
And the Kiwis as well.
You guys are really showing
really
love.
Really appreciate
from
it.
From as far away as you can
from
be.
From the Antipodes, as they used
Thank
to say.
You. Australasia.
Australasia. And I've always loved film, says Joseph. I found you guys after swimming to the depths of the ocean, only to find a long-lost treasure chest that inside had the words Pulp Kitchen inscribed on an ancient artifact. Just kidding, I found you on TikTok.
Nice.
After this monumental discovery, I binged your episodes on YouTube in an attempt to get caught up. Thankfully, I caught up right before the New Year celebrations. Again, great work on your part. To this main point, I just walked out of watching what might have been one of the best films made this century. Dune Part 2.
Of the century.
Colossal, breathtaking, and essential overload, this piece of art had me hooked from beginning to end. Hans Zimmer's score, which will in fact be on repeat until Part 3, Greg Fraser's perfect cinematography, every single member of the cast giving 200%, and of course, Denis Villeneuve's exceptional vision has made this film one I will not forget for as long as I breathe. My favourite moments include... Fade Rotha, he's great. I'm good at just paraphrasing over this in case there's any spoilers. Rebecca Ferguson, yep, great. And the scene with that is also good.
Yeah.
Thoughts? I will also just ask two quick questions, but I understand if there's not enough time to answer. No, it's okay, chuck them in. Ever since I was a kid, I've always loved buying DVDs, as my dad has quite a handful of them, which has now led me to continue to buying them, especially Blu-rays. I also have a lot of movie posters around my room, as I used to purchase a lot of Empire magazine, which came with double-sided posters. Oh, I love that. Do you remember when you used to buy like a magazine and it'd come with a free poster?
It's the best.
My questions are, did either of you have posters in your room as a kid? And did you have a lot of DVDs when you were younger? Do you have a lot now? Do you think physical media is going to die out very soon? I think it's about four questions in there. Thanks for entertaining us with your quick wit, valuable opinions, sharp, all caps,
dress, valuable opinions.
Valuable opinions, sharp dress sense, and spot on impressions. Sirens on our end, Joe. So Joe has...
Film posters
in your room.
I had two Daniel Craig James Bond posters.
Wow.
I had Casino Royale, like an A2. And then I had Skyfall.
Wow. Very Bond.
I really was.
Such a boy.
I think I got gifted the Casino Royale one. Mm. And I liked that film. So I was happy to have it represent my personality. And then I loved Skyfall. Huh. And when you're 15 and you're in HMV, you just get a Skyfall poster. That's what you do. And I had a Red Dead Redemption one, an Infamous 2 one,
wow,
an Uncharted 3 one, smaller.
I could smell the can of Lynx.
Oh yeah, yeah, in that room. Was there. And then I think the rest might have been football related, Arsenal related.
So I don't think I actually ever had any specific movie posters. I had a lot of music ones. The only movie posters I had was I had a sort of cartoon looking version of Jules and Vince from Pulp Fiction in it.
Yeah.
I also had a poster that was on my wall for years, which was like it was a sketch, basically like hand drawn thing that was a $1,000 bill, and on it it had actors from like. It had like Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, Cameron Diaz, Brad Pitt, from all these different from films I hadn't even seen, but now I have. I also had a Keep Calm and Carry On poster, which had loads of different variations, but they were all film related.
Yes, I had that same poster. Yeah. I had also a big one that said "Now Panic and Freak Out."
Oh, really?
I'm so like, I'm a teen, oh, wow, you know?
So edgy. Yeah. But no, other than that, it was David Bowie posters, Beatles posters.
Did you have a uni one? Did you have Apocalypse Now in your uni?
No, in uni. What did I have in my uni? No.
I went to your year two house once.
Yeah. I had no Bowie. Hang on. Bowie, NASA. I think I had a lot of like music and. I had Bowie at home and Bowie at uni. Yeah, it was,
For ages, like when I was much younger, I had Harry Potter, when the Philosopher's Stone came out, Harry Potter Gryffindor bedspreads. I had.
I had a really good sleeping bag, Harry Potter sleeping bag.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I had episode one stickers on my wardrobes for years. You know, when you just, that's something that's just so part of the set dressing of your room, you don't even think about it. And then I got to like, I don't know when, but like the prequels had very much been and gone. And I was just looking at like this sticker of Jar Jar Binks and like R2-D2 and like, you know, the episode one, the one that Anakin flies when he goes up to the Trade Federation. When
the Naboo fighter.
Naboo, I had that like just stuck on my wardrobe. And one time I was like, this is a terrible film. I love Star Wars. This is a terrible, and like Darth Sidious, like these little stickers. Like, I just ripped them off. They'd been on there for so many years there was the Jar Jar Binks outline for such a long time. But they eventually went.
But yeah, that's a rite of passage, having posters on your
wall. And DVDs, you have a little DVD collection.
Oh, DVDs, I have, there's lots of DVDs back at my parents' house that I've sort of helped get rid of them. But now I'm like, I had the point of having them for too long, needed to get rid of them, started to get rid of them. And now I'm like, actually, I'll probably hold on to them because I'm kind of missing physical media more. And then I have a Criterion collection as well. And guess what, James? It sits on my shelf and I never bloody watch it.
Yeah, I, at one point when I started identifying as a film fan, started to spend my pocket money on DVDs, but it's just, they're quite expensive. Yeah. And then Blu-rays came out and I was like, well, should I commit to Blu-rays? But by the time Blu-rays came out, like I didn't really have a Blu-ray player, and then digital starts happening. And there was this interesting school of thought that before, like, we sort of go, physical media is dead. But a lot of the people who are now old enough to buy physical media grew up in really cluttered, chaotic houses where all our media had to be stored. And it was like this sort of hoarded baggage where you look at old living rooms and family rooms from the noughties and 90s, and there's just media everywhere stacked. Boxes and VHS, and I think like we grow up, we become adults, we want to actually have a very minimal space without clutter because we grew up with it. So the we embrace digital media for all its flaws because it's just clean, minimal. You don't have to store anything, and then when you move you have to take all this boxes of media with you, and then you can't even play a VHS anymore and like CDs, you can't really play CDs anymore. But I'm not anti physical media. There's a lot of problems, especially recently. Didn't people lose access to a film?
Yeah. There's been lots of people. Disney took Disney stuff off of Disney Plus. I'm like, why? If you can't get that on Disney Plus, why?
So for ages, like Sony PlayStation, you could buy films and TV shows on the PlayStation store.
Yeah.
So like, you know, it's connected to your TV, makes sense. And I think they took away a bunch of stuff on the PlayStation store. And it was like, if you didn't already own it, you can't buy it. And it's like, if you bought the license, you don't have it anymore.
Ridiculous.
Which is, you know, it's there.
Anyway, Liam's name.
Moving on to Liam, who writes in to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com with tiny font. I need to zoom in. Liam says, George and James.
What is this, an email for ants?
It's an email for ants in Garamond. George and James, I'm Liam from Little New Zealand.
How are you? Aotearoa.
Another fan from Aotearoa.
Aotearoa, yeah.
Do a meetup.
Yeah.
We won't come.
I'd love to go to New Zealand.
I'd love to.
I'd have to have my expenses paid.
If you let us know, a brand would have to come in.
And I'm not flying coach. I'm flying premium if I'm going that far.
Yeah, we could do a little tour of Stone Street Studios.
Is that
where they shoot?
Yeah. I've been to Weta Workshop. Have I talked to that?
They're nice.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. And I was the only person. No one else in my tour group wanted to go there. And I had a personalized walkthrough tour, and I saw the stuff they designed for the Halo movie that they never made.
Yeah,
I mean, I know the TV show now. I don't know if they've used that for that, but it was great. I saw them designing stuff.
I'd love to go.
And I was like, so what can you tell me about you're working on? They were like, nothing. Can't tell you about anything.
I actually can't tell you.
I'm not allowed to tell you this.
I'm Liam from Little New Zealand, Aotearoa. I want to start by saying a big thank you for entertaining me while I drive 5 to 7 hours a day.
A day?
I always picture people driving. Told you this. Yeah. People driving.
New Zealand is big, but I mean,
spread out
places.
I work as a production runner / art department runner here on films in New Zealand.
Oh, that's
I
cool.
love that.
That is really cool.
What are you working on?
Yeah.
Tell us. Sirens on our end.
Big sirens.
Jesus. Liam, don't pull over. Here on New Zealand, your podcast helps me through the long shifts and countless traffic jams without proper entertainment can be so painful. You're very welcome. I wanted to email for two reasons. One, to give my thoughts on Dune Part 2, which was that it was a feat of visual storytelling like no other. I feel like for a long time, we've only been getting spectacle theatre experiences, but this finally felt like a spectacle and a story you can sink your teeth into. It was wildly refreshing. Curious to know what other films you think fit into this category. Before I do, we're almost like people are commenting on how bombastic and overwhelming it is, but as a compliment.
Yes.
It's quite hard to nail that of like, this was frightening and overwhelming and stimulating, but exceptional.
Yeah.
Any other films do you think fit into this category? A spectacle with a story you can sink your teeth into. I'd say Interstellar. Oppenheimer, Nolan's work in particular. I'd say the same about like Arrival.
Yeah, that's a good one, yeah.
So if you haven't seen Arrival, go and see Arrival. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
The second reason for this email is that next year in February, I'm moving to London, which is going to be a massive change and a fulfillment of a dream of mine to live in the cultural centre point. I was lucky enough to be able to claim my British passport last week, brackets my dad was born in the UK, and now it's all starting to feel very real. I'd love some help from fellow film Londoners. I was curious if you could fill me in on what you know about the UK film industry and living in London itself, and possibly some noteworthy theatres to check out if there's time. Over and out from 18,763 kilometres away, Liam, your long-time listener and first-time emailer, and a wave emoji with an Australian flag. Hello.
No, with a New Zealand flag.
With a New Zealand flag.
Similar, James, but they're different, actually. just quickly saved all our New Zealand listeners.
Okay, so congrats on moving to London. Film, I mean, like from a Pop Kitchen perspective, we would comment on the sort of media landscape of like
cinemas to go to and
cinemas to BFI. Go to. BFI is great. Picture House Central is great. Yeah. The BFI just retook over control over the BFI IMAX.
Yes.
And we've really noticed a difference in their offering in between the Marvel and the sort of Nolan IMAX films. There's really, really good stuff like the Alien double bill that we covered and... just seems like they'll put out Kurosawa stuff.
The programming is so much more interesting. The Prince Charles Cinema in Leicester Square is an independent cinema that always does old niche movies as well as new ones as well. But like, it is like the bastion for weird and different films off the beaten track. So that's a must. As a film person in London, you have to go there.
And then just like really solid multiplexes that are very functional and you can go there. In terms of like film industry, from your perspective of production, I don't work in film. I do commercial branded content. I will say the TV industry, as in like sort of daytime TV is in a very bad way. The thing is, 3/4 of people working in TV currently right now are unemployed and Channel 4 just announced that they're going to be digital only by 2030. So that whole side is really suffering. That's from a multitude of factors over multiple years of everyone becoming incredibly risk averse. They only want to commission shows that are essentially replicatable overseas for an eternity of time. So there's no more like current news shows that are basically irrelevant after a week. So that's really tricky. But in terms of film, I do hear a lot that London, in not just commercial branded content, but in cinema as well, has become a great media hub. So UK is an exporter of financial services, and that's been our largest export for a long time. But media and production has very much been matching that. And London is definitely a hub for media production. There's lots of like different things going on in the space with new media. So definitely exciting, definitely work to go around. We will look out for you in London. Liam,
good luck with the move.
Thank you very much.
And this next email is from Jack. Jack, who writes in and says, "Hi, James and George. I've only recently discovered your podcast and I'm very much delighted that I have done.
Welcome.
Without kissing your backsides too much and causing you to become too big-headed, your podcast is certainly one of the best I've listened to for an awful long time.
Welcome.
For movie and TV reviews and insights."
Nothing else. You're not funny?
No. "Since unearthing your podcast only a week ago," that's a quick conversion from first listen to first writing.
Welcome.
I've listened to 21 episodes between work, in the car, or in the evening's cooking dinner.
Nice. Okay.
I'm from Ireland, and there's an awful big focus on Irish film, Irish actors, and cinematography, what with the most recent success and praise for Cillian Murphy, mm-hmm. Paul Mescal, Andrew Scott, Barry Keoghan, Jesse Buckley, et al. However, my
Buckley.
Questions... Sorry?
Love Jesse Buckley.
Yes, as we discussed last week. However, my questions arise... you've put questions arises. It's singular. So questions arise from an English... Then I tripped over something myself. Would you listen to that? However, my questions arise from an Irish film I rewatched called The Quiet Girl. It is an absolutely gorgeous movie and one that I would encourage you both, and indeed anyone else, to watch if you are yet to do so. Mm. I'm not a crier, but this movie is one of the very few where I absolutely did sob my eyes out.
I'm not a crier, but if I was,
I did become a little bit blubbery and emotional wreck of a man at the end. The ending is absolutely heart-wrenching, yet beautiful, and would be incredibly suspicious of anyone who isn't stirred emotionally by the ending of this movie overall.
Yeah.
That movie, again, is called The Quiet Girl, so do check it out.
Thank you.
My question is, what movies or movie endings bring a tear or several to your eye and why? Keep up the good work. Look forward to catching up on all remaining episodes I've yet to listen to.
Welcome.
Our boy Cillian for the Oscar. Yeah. Well, by the time this episode comes out, he will have probably won it.
Yeah.
He finishes with, I'm going to have a go at this, and it's Shan Leeds, I want to say.
I'll give you that.
Slanche. That's when that's cheers, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know because I'm ignorant. Thank you, Jack, very much. Movies or movie endings that make you cry?
Well, recent examples would be All of Us Strangers, Lives. Whew. Great emotional reaction to that. And then sort of all-time greatest sob fest. Call me tragic. Marley and Me as a dog owner.
Oh, yeah.
That is devastating.
Yeah, I've never seen it, but I know it.
Every so often, that final clip where Marley, you know...
Marley's.
Has to get Marleyed.
Yeah.
I'm ruined. I'm ruined for an hour.
That's cheating, though, isn't it? I mean, it's not cheating. It's cheap.
It's cheap. You know those... there's that thing that when you have kids, you find any media or film or news story about a child getting abducted or hurt. You're like, oh my God, I just can't hear it. Yeah. I just can't see it. I'm like that with dogs. Yeah, yeah. It got my heart and I never let it go. Coco, very sad.
Yeah.
Normal People was really affecting me at the end of this
episode.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, Normal People, I would say that. Yeah. Brokeback Mountain as well.
Yeah, Call Me Absolutely. By Your Name, final scene. Forrest Gump. I'm going to give it.
But you know, when I was younger, that is good. Yeah. Oh, and It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, yeah.
A happy emotion. But Toy Story 3. Toy Story 3, yeah.
And Call Me Cheesy, Titanic, man.
Really?
Oh.
I'm due a watch of that, really.
You haven't done it?
Not properly, no.
I'll go see it in a cinema with you.
I'd love to see it on the big screen.
Yeah, I've never seen it on the big screen. That's why I want to go. They did the 25th anniversary recently. 25th? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 97. Yeah, I would see Titanic. There's Marley and Me, man. If you haven't seen it and you've ever interacted with
everyone
the dog,
knows that film for that one thing.
But it's also good.
All right, okay.
I'll stand by Marley and Me.
Thank you for the emails. Those are all the emails we have today. It was a pleasure hearing from you, and we can love to hear you have you continue to send them in to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com.
As always, George, let's end with a game.
With a game.
Ready?
Yeah, hi.
As always, Pop Kitchen ends
with a game.
With a game. George, I've got one round of a great game
one
for us
singular
that we
game.
Played before. A singular round of a singular game. You know this game if you listened to our podcast before. This is the name three in 6 seconds.
Oh, God.
Super intense quick fire, but questions that are definitely achievable.
Yes.
But are they achievable in 6 seconds? You can play along at home. George, are you ready?
No.
Your time, the game starts now. Are you ready?
Yes.
Name three films that have won Best Picture.
12 Years a Slave, Spotlight, and Argo.
Name three characters in The Matrix.
Trinity, Neo, and Morpheus.
Name three MacGuffins.
The rabbit's foot.
Yes.
The entity.
Yeah,
the Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
And the briefcase in Pulp Fiction.
Yes. Name three characters that can fly.
Superman.
Yes.
Peter Pan.
Yes.
And Vision.
Yes, that's the three I had. Name three songs from the musical film Grease.
Grease is the word, the opening one. Grease Lightning.
Yeah.
And We Go Together Like Shabba Dabba Dabba Dabba.
I'll give it. Name the three lead characters from Jurassic Park.
Name their characters.
Yes.
Dr. Alan Grant.
Yes.
Dr. Ellie Sattler.
Yes.
And Dr. Ian Malcolm.
Yes, well done. Name three shark films, no sequels.
Shark Tale.
Yes.
Deep Blue Sea.
Yes.
And
the film. The shark film.
The shark film. No sequel. Oh, Jaws. Yeah. I think you meant a shark film that has no sequels.
No.
Jaws.
I'm not letting you do Jaws 2, 3, 4. Name three Blake Lively films.
A Simple Favor. Blake Lively. The Age of Adeline.
Yes.
And, Blakey.
Last one. Name three films where the characters in the film watch a film.
Say that again.
Name three films where the characters in the film watch a film.
Notting Hill, he goes to the cinema, yes. Wears the snorkel yes. Glasses. It Follows, they go to the cinema. They do yep. Leave before the film starts. That's all right, that's fine. Yeah. And they would also, Taxi Driver, he goes, doesn't he go and he
yes.
Does the...
Yeah, very good.
Or Cape Fear I'd also take as well.
You could have done that's the end of the game.
Yeah. What's the other Blake Lively movie?
I was going to say The Shallows, which is also a shark film, so you could have doubled up there.
Oh, I could have doubled up. Yeah, not seen it though, so yeah. Okay.
Jaws, Deep Blue Sea, Sharknado.
Sharknado, yeah.
That's why I said no sequels, because you could do five taste. Of those.
Even though I made it harder for myself by thinking that they couldn't have sequels, yeah. I still did it. Shark Tale.
Name three shark films, no sequels.
Yes.
Yeah. The Mission Impossible series is always great to go for, MacGuffins.
Yeah.
Well, you're Knocklist, The Rabbit's Foot.
Yes, The Rabbit's Foot.
The One Ring, you could have got Mission Impossible.
Oh, that's a good MacGuffin.
Ark of the Covenant.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's always the Holy Grail for Indiana Jones. And technically Dial of Destiny.
And technically, yes.
Yeah.
No, that's not the Dial of Destiny. Isn't the Dial of Destiny Archimedes' dial?
It's still there. He still runs about with it.
Yeah, but he doesn't have the Ark of the Covenant, does he?
It drives character...
Does it?
A MacGuffin.
No, but does the Ark of the Covenant drive Dial of Destiny? That's what you said.
Oh, no.
Oh, I see.
You were debating if it was a MacGuffin. I'm like, of course it is.
You've melted my brain. Yeah. But I actually passed that, I think, pretty well.
I wrote down the same three characters that can fly. I said Peter Pan, Superman, and Vision. Isn't that weird? Wow.
Well, can you give me another one then? Who can fly organically?
Organic flight. So Iron Man doesn't count.
No.
Because he's born with the ability to fly.
Has the ability to fly. Dr. Manhattan from Watchmen. He can fly.
Yeah. Wanda from WandaVision.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Go down the superhero route. Magneto. Now, do you count Magneto as a flyer?
No,
because he pushes the Earth away from himself.
No, he uses his metallicalesis, whatever it is, to enhance him. In the same way, would you count Thor? Because Thor uses his hammer.
He actually throws... You know who you could count? The guys in the film Chronicle.
God, yeah,
could. They fly.
Yes.
That film.
And Nathan Petrelli in season one of Heroes.
Yes.
Well done, George. Yeah,
it's actually not that many who are natural flyers.
It's a very Superman thing.
As God intended. Real flyers. Green Lantern?
Sure, but then it'll be counting the ring.
Is he imagining the flight ability? I'm not that clued up on my Green Lantern.
No, shocker.
I'm surprised they haven't rebooted that.
Yes.
It's actually one that I feel like would be ripe for reboot.
Maybe they just don't know how. They're like, if we don't know how to make it with a sledgehammer and do a stupid blockbuster version of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, James, for that.
Yeah. Well, Jurassic Park's coming back.
I was very impressed how quickly I got all those.
Yeah, yeah. I think you did well. Yeah. I thought it was like, it's a well-known film that you saw recently.
Yes.
So anyway, within a year.
I think I've only seen Jurassic Park and maybe, I think I saw Jurassic Park 3 at the cinema. Oh, no, Jurassic World. I've seen Jurassic World 1.
Same.
Alan.
Yeah. Well, there you go, guys. Thank you so much for spending your time with us. If you've made it to this part of of the episode, you're clearly our biggest fans who enjoy us the most. So thank you so much for sticking around. Don't forget, we post new episodes of this podcast every single Wednesday.
And please continue to follow us and engage with us on social media. We're posting more film bites, more things we've interviewed with people and spoken with people out on the street. And continue to like, subscribe, share, comment. Send it to your friends. Helps us very much so. We're growing on social platforms and we really appreciate it. And welcome to all new listeners as well.
We have missed the Oscars by product of us recording early, but we will do a little catch up when we find out who won the what, and we'll go over it and react to it.
If there's any big surprises.
We'll see.
If
people are probably listening to this.
Do you remember in the Oscars when that person did that thing?
Yeah.
Like, oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Who does that? But yes, we'll be back in due course with another
film review. I hope so. Why am I saying it like I don't know what's happening? We do sometimes, this every week.
Sometimes when you talk about the future episodes, it sounds like you're never coming back. Yeah, we'll be back.
Yeah, sure.
Next week, I guess, for
we'll be here.
A film. it's like you've been your contract is over, but you're not allowed to declare it. And we'll be
packing up my
doing more films, yeah, like yeah, we always have.
And yeah, that'll be great. Thank you much, Mike.
Thank you. That'll be great. And then let me
my
know
Uber is here.
Bye, guys.
Have a great week. Bye-bye.